and welcome to Tabletop Game Talk On Topic, a show where we talk about tabletop gaming topics of all kinds. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Kitty.
And I'm Chris.
Today we're talking about cheating. This may seem like a pretty straightforward topic, but we're going to draw it out for an hour anyway by looking at cheating in a number of different ways. From types of players to the types of games, when is cheating really cheating, and what should you do about it?
But first, as always, a thank you to our Patreon friends of the show, Emil Jojam, George Gia, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, and the SGC, and thank you to all of our other Patreon patrons as well. So we did a feedback episode last week, and I said I was going to put Sean Peck's really cool YouTube video in there, and then I didn't.
How could you?
I got like 27 emails saying, hey, I was looking for this link and I couldn't find it. So I went back and I added it in there.
Nice.
I might be rounding up on the 27 emails, but there was some concern.
27 is a weird number to round to.
it's probably like you got one or two.
I like rounding to the nearest prime.
Okay.
That's the thing, right?
Sure.
The nearest prime.
We'll give it to you.
Still lies. I think you're cheating right now.
I might be cheating. Cheating the numbers. Mwahaha. So I did also, speaking of things I didn't do, is I did not put an input thread on this topic for a number of reasons. Number one, it was really hard for me to come up with a way of saying, hey, we're going to talk about cheating. What do you guys think about cheating without just coming back and everyone's going to be like, cheating's bad.
Cheating is bad.
Yeah. Yes. Why would you do that? Blah, blah, blah. So I'm like, okay, fine. Also, the timing of everything, it was kind of tight on the window for feedback. So if you are one of our regular inputters and you didn't see this thread and you're like, wait a minute, where is this topic coming from? That is why we're surprising you. I'm cheating.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. You totally cheated on this whole topic feedback thing.
I did. But one of the things I was doing when I was like, okay, we're talking about cheating. I really think this is an interesting topic. And I think we will have plenty to talk about. But I started doing some research on cheating. And I found an article, and people like when we talk about articles. So this link I will also put in our show notes.
You better.
It's a very, very short article, but I want to read a little blurb from it because I think it's kind of a cool way of starting off.
You just better do it and not cheat this time.
Actually, you know, Josh, I'm going to make you read this blurb. Sure. I've already read this blurb.
Sure.
And you have no idea this is.
I have no idea what's coming. I haven't done my due diligence and read it beforehand. So we're talking about the site Mindeth.
Mind the Ethos.
There we go. Okay, so the comment and article blurb says...
The excerpt.
Yeah, there you go. People all have a small bit of cheating leeway that they can do and not feel bad about themselves. Sometimes, however, this leads down a slippery slope. Someone tries a small form of cheating, gets away with it, and slowly but surely, their dishonesty ratchets up to the point where it becomes a real problem with serious consequences. Although the total length of the journey to being a big cheater may be long, the hops in between are very small. That makes it easy to rationalize each one within what Airily calls the fudge factor. Once you have reached a certain level of dishonesty, your baseline also shifts. Once you are comfortable with where you are, you can just fudge along again.
Yeah, so David Airily, he has written some books on cheating, and specifically cheating within games. Now, a lot of the cheating stuff you talk about in games is video game related.
Right.
But it sort of kind of goes over, if you're talking about tournaments level board games or card games, you could potentially see some of the cheating as well. But I think it's fascinating just kind of looking at that. So with that in mind, let's talk about the simplest kind of cheating that we all start with when we're really little and we're kids, and really we sit down in front of a game and we find out that the object of the game is to win, and it's really easy to win if I just don't follow the rules. What do we think about this kind of cheating? Is this normal? Like, do all little kids cheat?
All kids cheat. Or all kids try to cheat. But here's the thing about kids, they're almost all bad at cheating. They are super obvious. You can see when they're doing it and you call them out on it and say, no, those aren't the rules. And that's, I think, a lot of playing games with kids is not just playing games with them for fun, but like teaching them how a game works and like why people want to play it and like how cheating is making the fun not work.
So it's basically, cheating is really the act of not following the rules, right?
Yeah, that's how I would define it.
So, and it could be, cheating can be a little bit of not following the spirit of the game. We'll get to that a little bit as well. But I think in general, if you're not following the rules, you're cheating. But this leads to an interesting question. So from little kids to adults who are learning a new game, you find out you're playing the game for a little while. Maybe you taught the game. This is completely a fictitious thing. And you've been playing a rule incorrectly. And you've been doing it for a certain portion of the game. And then someone says, hey, I think this rule actually works like this. Now you're halfway through and you've been... Everyone's been playing with this rule as an understanding, even though most people probably weren't taking advantage of that rule. Is that still cheating?
I mean, I wonder if this applies to Volkswagen when they were playing the game of making cars and hitting laws to do with emissions. Was that the defense in court? We thought the rule was like this, and we just didn't realize that it was probably not, right?
Well, you bring up a good thing, because there's a lot of, in our political environment today, we hear a lot more about laws and intent. Intent is a big thing in the legal system.
Right.
There are many, many rules or laws that only apply if the intent to break that law or the intent behind what that law is for was there. If there's no intent, then it's not actually
I accidentally broke the law. I had no idea I was doing that. Yeah, I mean, I can understand that. I mean, it's like with the games that that's the question you're essentially asking is like, is it more okay if the person really didn't know they were cheating? And totally, right? Like we all, we're all people, if the person didn't know they were breaking the rules, it's like, oh, they just didn't know.
I think what it comes down to is, was everyone breaking the rule the same way? Because if we're all playing by the same wrong rule, then that's okay.
Yeah.
Unless you're in some situations, which right. is something like an asymmetrical game. We were playing Cry Havoc, and we were playing a rule wrong. And we decided we would just keep doing it wrong for the rest of the game because we'd all been doing it wrong the same way.
Right.
But it really affected Sydney's race much more than me and Chris. Mm. So at the end, when we were totaling up scores, Sydney was way, way behind us. And we were like, why is that? And then when we looked more into it, it was because she should have been getting these extra points that we just, all of us didn't count, but it affected her way more than me and Chris. So I don't think me and Chris cheated because we all did it the same wrong way, but it also wasn't fair.
Absolutely. Well. Yeah, there's those consequences based on the fact, like you're saying, it's like context specific. It's like, okay, you didn't know, we're not going to hate you for not knowing that you were breaking the rule, but if you are way ahead because of that, like then we've got an issue. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it can just break the complexity of things can also cause cheating inadvertently. Back to the law, tax law is specifically set up where if you didn't know the law was there, you didn't actually break it. You may still be penaltied, fines, all that kind of stuff, but you're not criminally liable for the law you broke because the law is so complicated that they don't expect you to know it.
And lawyers, please chime in if Chris is talking out of his something.
Please do. but it is a crazy system. We hear right now it's like, intent. Collusion. Well, it's only collusion if collusion's not a law that you can break. There's no law against collusion, but conspiracy or, obstruction of justice. These things have to have intent behind them. Otherwise, you didn't actually commit it in the first place. So when you get a rule wrong, taking it back to board games, out of politics real quick.
Excellent.
When you get a rule wrong, you didn't intend to get that wrong.
Yeah.
Now, here's the rub on this, though. What if I'm getting a rule wrong on purpose? I don't share that I'm getting this rule wrong on purpose. I just like, I figured I'm doing this wrong. I'm ahead. I really want to win. I'm just not going to let anyone know that I got this rule wrong. At the end, I may discover it in the book. It's like, oh, we've been doing this all wrong. It should have been this way. But it's okay. We all played by the same rules, even though it really did benefit me. That's clearly the same example that Kitty just mentioned on Cry Havoc, but now it was intentional.
So you're saying you found out halfway through the game that you were breaking the rule, and then you were like, oh, but it's helped me, so I'm not going to say anything.
Yes.
Cheating.
Oh, yeah,
totally. I call cheating on it.
I was totally cheating. I mean, there's no way around that one, surely.
So if everyone has been doing it all the same way, you're just using it better than them.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that's cheating. As long as, because I think the conversation would go, if you pointed out, like, oh, I think we're doing this wrong. You would have to, as a group, decide and say, like, should we just keep playing it this way? And, like, leaning the conversation towards, let's just let it keep cheating this way, that I don't think is wrong. Oh, but no. Not saying something at all, that is where my line is, apparently. Yeah.
What if you're playing with a group, and you know, and we've all played with these people that are very much by the book rules, and or competitive people or something along those lines. You're playing with this group and you realize you're looking up a different rule and you read something. It's like, oh, crap, we've been doing this wrong. If I say this, this is going to spoil the entire game
for everybody. Kitty's
going
to be so mad at me because I am way ahead because of this thing and I didn't realize it until now.
She's and there's flipping no way the table. Of undoing it. Yeah. If we do this, the table's getting flipped.
Sorry, Kitty.
It's fine. No, it's fair.
What do we do in that situation? Because again, exact same thing, right. But now it's not necessarily, I may still be benefiting from it, but now I'm trying to save the fun for the entire table.
Well, it's a tough one because it's like, that's where my mind went to as well. It's kind of like that awkward moment when you realize halfway through and you're like, but this could really throw a spanner in the works. And actually, is this in anyone's interest to know this? But then it's on you to like, you know, actually, you know, play the right way once you realized.
I think it also depends on how long the game is playing. If this is a game that we have been playing for 3 hours, that I have invested all of my time and energy in, don't tell me. Just let it go to the end. Try not to maybe like monitor how you're using it yourself. Try to use it in a fair way. Make sure that, you know, it's being used properly. Or if it's something where like, we still have 3 more hours to go. Let's figure out as a group how we're going to play it going forward. That's fine. But, you know, I think it is kind of a delicate situation there. But if it's a 45-minute game, let it go and play it again right after and it'll be fine.
Well, and that's one of the ways that I learn games is I will read the rules. I'll teach the rules. We'll play the game. Then I'll reread the rules because that's when I have the context behind it. I know what the game plays and how it goes. So when I'm reading this, I can apply it to what we've already learned. And I would say that 80 to 90% of the times, I will find something we did wrong.
Yes.
It's like, oh, we were supposed to do this or this. Usually it doesn't matter. Sometimes it's a bigger thing than not, but we've played the entire game before I double check the rules, before I learn it. Because that first game, and I've said it many, many times, it is a learning experience. We're teaching ourselves the game. It's not meant to be a competitive thing. And I think in that case, it's fine. We've agreed that, yes, okay, fine. We're probably going to get something wrong early on. All right.
I have something to add to that a little bit. Okay. So when you're doing that, what I really like, so when we were playing Castles of Burgundy, we realized that we had been playing the cities and the farms a little bit wrong. That the way the cities were built, you had to have only one type of each building in a city, and we had all done that wrong. And that with the farms, when you scored like the same kind of animals, you scored them over again, and like there were little bonuses and stuff to those that we hadn't been playing. So we figured this out almost at the very end of the game. And at the end, when we did our final scoring, we did it with the rules we had been playing. And then we looked at, if we had done this right, how would it have affected our scores? And we kind of like evened it out. And really, it hadn't affected it that much. But like looking into that, you know, somebody could feel really vindicated, like, oh, hey, you know, we didn't know this, but like I get, you know, even though I lost, I get to pretend like I won because if we had been scoring right, then maybe I would have. And, you know, there's that acknowledgement of the oops, we messed up.
Yeah. And there was still a little asterisk next to it anyway, because we're like, okay, fine, we rescored it. But had we known that, you know, multiple animals counted, maybe we would have played differently.
The play, definitely. You know?
But that's the type of thing where it's like, okay, so we sort of cheated, and that was your fault, Kitty.
It was totally my fault. I taught the rules.
Yep.
So you acknowledged.
Yep. And you weren't into farm animals. That sounds worse than it is. But
no, I wasn't into farm animals. That sounds great.
But Spencer really was. And he was like actively collecting pigs. He's like, oh, there's a pig on that tile. I want it. Now, he wasn't trying for strategy purposes. He was trying because he wanted to have a pig farm. But maybe other people would have been doing the same thing or trying to block him. Or it would have played differently.
Yeah, definitely.
And in that case, I'm like, I don't think we cheated. I just played a game of viticulture a couple weeks ago. And one of the guys I was playing with, he was teaching the game. And he's like, I want to make sure I'm not cheating, so I'm going to double check this rule. And he actually took points away from him like two turns back. He's like, oh, I did this rule wrong. I don't want to be cheating, so I'm going to undo this. Where everyone at the table was like, no, it was fine.
It's
like,
fine.
We were all playing by the same, you know,
wrong rule.
It's totally fine. He's like, no, I don't want to be cheating. And that's really what got me thinking about this topic. I'm like, where is that gray area where it's like, this is absolutely cheating?
So what happens when one player didn't realize a rule, but everyone else at the table knew the rule? So I can score this kind of card each round. I can exhaust it and it refreshes. And everyone else at the table has been doing that, but I haven't been doing that. And I realize it halfway through the game. And, you know, do the other players let them like, oh, you can like, you know, with this card, I would have just gotten more points. Can I give myself those points back? Or like, because everyone else at the table was doing it. They knew the rule. They were paying attention. It had been stated. Is that cheating? Do they let them take the points?
So there is a situation where that is cheating.
Yeah.
It is cheating when the card or the ability or whatever you were looking at, when it specifically says that you must do this. If you must gain an extra point whenever this card is standing or something like that, it wasn't an option. You weren't supposed to skip it. So we should retroactively fix that.
Right. It was some passive collection. It should have been always collected.
Right.
Regardless of if you did anything or not.
Right. You may have forgot to do it, but you didn't have the option to forget to do it once we realized that you were forgetting to do it. Now, that sometimes that happens. And sometimes when you play a card, like you play an early card, it's expensive, but it's going to give you a point every round. And the whole point of playing that is to get that every round. It's like, oh, crap, I haven't been doing this. It's not an optional thing, so I should fix this because that's what it should be. If it's an optional thing, then everyone at the table has to agree. It's like, okay, yeah, we all agree that you haven't done this for four turns in a row, so you should get four extra points.
Yes.
Yeah, and they have to agree. Yeah, I think it's the big thing. Because it's like, well, we took the time and energy and effort to remember the rules, and you didn't, and that's the game.
Yep.
I mean, it's like, yeah, it's tough because it's like, well, oh, I just forgot to do that really optimal move two moves ago. Can I just go back and do it? Like, I don't know. Maybe it's not the same, but it's like...
It feels kind of the same. I think the actual situation where this came up was I was playing Terraforming Mars, and somebody had the puppy card, and... As an action, you can just put a thing on your puppy card. And if you don't do that and you pass, like, you know, you just lost a point. That's all it is. Yep. And, you know, they're basically like, oh, well, I would have done this every round if I had remembered to do it.
Right.
That's like, do we get like that one? Because it's a choice.
Yeah.
It's not a you have to do this. It's a choose to pass or choose to do one more action. And if you're not choosing to do that one more action,
I think it depends on the group. It's like, does the group think that that's part of the game? Like, remembering and keeping all that knowledge in your head and remembering to do all the actions, is that part of the game? And are we gonna, or are we like, no, you know, that's fine. So I think it's probably group dependent, right?
We're gonna bring this back up during an episode where we do on complex games, because this comes to that, and
yes,
and it's a little bit related. Yeah. Because the more complex a game is, the more inadvertent cheating can happen.
I find myself in this situation all the time. The amount of, you know, heavy Euro games that, you know, you have us play, and I'm just like,
especially lately,
yeah, and just like, I find myself accidentally doing things that I shouldn't, or forgetting to do things that would have been really good for me that would should be really obvious, but I was just trying to keep too many things in my head, and I'm like, oh, can I just, you know, do this now? And it's like, no. And it's like, yeah, that makes sense, but it hurts.
Now, I will say, you know, there's people out there saying right now, it's like, okay, you're not really talking about cheating. You're talking about making mistakes and stuff like
right.
that, which is really where I'm trying to get that gray area there, because right. there are situations. So putting the puppies on the cards, I'm just going to put one at the beginning of my turn and one at the end of my turn. And as long as nobody notices, I'm actually really cheating. You know,
well, a good example of this is Gloria, when she started learning how to play Words with Friends, which is basically Scrabble on your phone. And she was using a bunch of sort of dictionary tool things for like the letters that she had. And I was like, you can't do that. How do you sleep at night, Gloria? You're, you know, using this, you know,
everyone's
AI.
Doing it.
But that was her argument, right? She was like,
everyone
she
is
was
doing
like,
it.
I'm playing these people and I'm seeing these words go down. And she's like, I know they didn't just think of that. She was like, if I don't cheat, then they're going to cheat, and I need to get up to a certain level, and then I can stop cheating. And her argument is now that she doesn't use it anymore because she's got so good. She knows all the two-letter words. She has a great vocabulary. She doesn't need it anymore. But I was like, at the beginning, I was like, oh, my goodness, this is awful. What are you doing?
Well,
Go ahead.
And cheating in video games, we are going to definitely talk about it on this episode.
Yeah.
So let's come back to that.
Oh, sure.
We're going to put a virtual pin into it.
Yes.
Because I think cheating in video games is a completely... It's a phenomenon that is super, super interesting.
Right, because I guess there, it's the point is that it's virtual and that she's not sat around a table in front of a board. And so, you know, it would be a bit more obvious if she had a dictionary out.
Exactly. Take it to Scrabble. You're at a game of Scrabble and you're browsing Twitter on your phone, right? You're just like, no, I'm just browsing Twitter as you pick your thing. But really what I have is a dictionary site and I'm putting in all my letters and it's telling me what the best words are to use with this letter. That is blatant and obvious cheating, right? And I'm doing it to your face, which feels very different than that virtual, like remote multiplayer cheating. I think that's a fascinating thing. It's like, we are more likely to cheat when we wouldn't necessarily get caught, even if everyone assumes we're cheating.
Yeah, just like similar with negative comments on the internet. It's like, you know, I'm faceless and they're not in front of me, so I can say the most horrible things now.
Yes. All right, Kitty, did you have something to add before we move on to co-op games?
No, I'm going to wait till we're talking about video games.
All right, let's talk about co-op games and solo games real quick.
We should.
So in a co-op game, this is actually the biggest difference between co-op games and solo games to me. So we talk about how a lot of co-op games can just be a solo game with multiple people. I think when you have those multiple people, you have one, at least one other person that is keeping you honest.
Exactly.
Ooh, I've got a rebuttal though. Because
all right.
You all have a collective incentive to agree to cheat together when it suits the group.
But if you do that, then you all also know it's like, but we cheated.
True. I mean, it depends on your group though. I mean, you know, you spend like 4 hours playing some co-op game and you're like, we were so close. And remember that turn 5 turns ago when we just forgot something stupid that should have helped us? And well, this is going to make up for it. I mean, that was, you know, it's like a do-over. So
the justifiable cheat.
Yeah.
Well, that's why I really like Time Stories as a co-op, because it feels like you get to go back to that moment. That's like how the whole game works.
Right.
And I think good co-ops have incentive for you to not cheat. The whole point is that if you cheat, you're ruining the fun. Like,
right.
That's the whole thing. And I do think that there's like that collective, like the circle of trust that you've all entered into to play a game together.
Yeah.
And if you're cheating, you have all decided to break the circle. And like, it's not fun anymore. Because if you always know, like, oh, I can go back those 5 turns, what is the consequence of any choice?
Right.
Why have we all gotten together? And when you've all made an effort, you're all at the table, that's the whole point of the game. And I think it's just easier for me. It never really occurs to me in a co-op to really cheat. Like, yeah, we might talk about like, oh, if only we had done that. But I would never do the actual work of going back and doing it.
We might go back a turn or two. So when we were playing Pandemic Legacy, there would be situations where it's like, okay, if you do this, you do this, and do this. And we'd actually move the pieces and then realize, oh, that didn't actually work out the way we thought it would. Let's reverse that. Or I go here, and I have one action left. It's like, okay, well, before you did that, you used your action to clear that city first. So we'll do that kind of retroactive turn thing.
But I think we do it all on one turn.
Yes,
and
yes.
It's like just taking the turn. And it's looking at how the turn could play out. I think that's just part of taking the turn. And we never like, oh, if only I had one more action, I could have done this.
Well, why don't you just take another action?
I just did it.
Yeah.
We had 5 actions. No, we don't. We've never done that.
No.
Well, I think that game and good co-op games in particular incentivize the group that, you know, when you fail, you don't fail so harshly that you're really incentivized to cheat. Like, okay, we lost a round on Pandemic Legacy. We take a little bit of a hit, but we also get some bonuses because clearly you're finding it hard and you need some help. So you get some more bonuses for next round. So actually, it doesn't matter that much if we fail this thing. It's like, we were so close, but hey, that's fine. We'll do better next time.
It also seems to depend a lot on the randomness. I think that the more random a game is, the less it feels like, oh, we didn't win because it was too hard. It was just like, oh, the cards pulled out. Like, if only it had been one different card, you know, it's like, it doesn't feel like, oh, this has been like this massive undertaking that was too difficult. It's just like, oh, it just, luck wasn't on our side this time. Oh, man, let's try again because we can win. And if that winnability ratio has to be right to make it still feel fun. And if it's not winnable, it's not a good game.
So let's talk about two other co-ops where cheating is almost becomes a social contract in the games. And I'll mention them both, and then I'll explain them real quickly just in case people haven't played it. Hanabi and The Mind. So Hanabi is a reverse hand game. So you have a hand of cards. You're looking at the back of your cards. Everyone else can see what you have, and you go around, and each time someone's turn, they can pick a person and tell them something about their hand. Very specifically, these two cards are blue, these two cards are a three, or whatever it is. They have to give the full information for the piece of information they're giving. And the idea is essentially you're trying to play the cards 1 to 5 in the middle, and the most, you have 5 piles, you're trying to get a perfect score of 25 for a co-op game. So that's Hanabi. The Mind is even more subtle than that. We all have a number of cards in our hand based on the level, 1 at level 1, 2 at level 2, and we're trying to play them in order from 1 to 100. And you're not allowed to communicate, period. Like, that's the name. That's basically the rule of the game.
Is there really no communication whatsoever? I mean, is it your body language isn't allowed?
You are not allowed to reveal any information about your card is what the rules say.
Right.
But that I believe there's also something about not talking and that type of thing. So, but revealing information about your card can be a little bit of a fuzzy thing. Because now when you're talking about the mind, is me just, should I just sit there and just stare into your eyes endlessly and then eventually play a card? Or am I going to like kind of inch that card out or to the table? Because I think it's pretty low and I think it's lower than yours and I want to see what your reaction is. You're going to play the second way, but is that cheating?
Well, I mean, that game is awesome. And I've played it a lot actually since we got it at Gen Con?
Gen Con, Origins. Yeah. I picked up copies at Gen Con. We first played it at Origins.
Right. That was where I got mine. And it's just like I teach it to people, and I actually teach it and say that body language is allowed because I prefer there being some information. My cutoff line for me in this game is that you can't have any exact information. So, you know, holding up fingers to say 1 and 3 to show that I have a 13 card is 100% cheating. And then I also think, you know, giving increments of 10 in some sort of body language is also cheating because you're getting to an exact kind of figure. But if I start putting my fingers together in a sort of vague like distance, I mean, you don't know what that means. You know, it's, you know, I'm close to this card, but you don't know exactly what this, you know, how close I am. You know, you don't know what my reference is and how big.
See, I would call that cheating.
Yeah,
you can call that cheating. Yeah, but in your circle, it isn't because that's the agreed upon rule.
I mean, I've had trouble getting people to that level. Like people like really rail against it because they want to give more information. They're like dying for people to know. Like, oh my God, I need you to know more about this card. And they want to give way more than even I'm letting them give. And so I'm like the policeman during the thing. And you're saying I'm quite lenient, but... Yeah, they're like, oh, God, you're so strict with this.
I hate this game so much. That's all I have to say about it. I love this game. Is not my kind of game. I don't like, it's not fun to me. I don't like it. It's like, if you're not cheating, you're not doing anything. It's so boring. I don't know.
Oh, my God.
It's
I love
just
this
not
game.
My thing. And I know.
Everyone I've played with really likes it, but
except me.
Except you. And, you know, it's a game for a different type of person, I guess. But it's just like, yeah, I
But that's sort of, so that's what makes this game fascinating is the group that you're playing with has to find the right level of bending those rules.
Yes.
Where you are all having fun playing by that. Because I agree, as the game, you know, is written, you're holding cards and you're just staring at each other and not doing anything. The designer does not play the game that way. The designer of the game is doing that. Yeah, I think I'm gonna, it's like, or if I have 100 in my hand, I'm just kind of sitting back, folding my hands. I'm not going to do anything. That body language is there. Now, I'd say like measuring distance is crossing a line for me.
Sure.
But all the other body language things, I like that. I like that. Oh, I think I'm close. I think I should. And you know, maybe you have yours.
If I'm recalling the rules right, it doesn't say no communication. It says no words or gestures. So I would call this a gesture, the finger measuring, but I would call playing your card slowly body language. And I think that body language is allowed, but gesturing is not. And that is a subtle difference. And, you know, are you cheating? I don't know. If you're playing the game and you're having fun and everyone's playing the same rules, it goes back to my first scenario that we talked about is, no, it's not cheating. You're not, you haven't broken the circle of trust. Everyone is still having fun the same way. And as long as it's not asymmetrical, there's no difference in the scoring, it's still the same level of fun. It still works pretty much the same way.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting caveat here. In my group, when we play, there's a mechanism in the game where you can have this tool that allows you to reveal your lowest card, because you all feel as a group that you know, you have similar cards, that something, you're getting the vibe that you all have very close to each other, and so you can put your hand up, reveal your lowest card. My group considers that sort of like cheating, even though it's 100% not cheating. It's a rule that is allowed. They're like, that breaks the fun for them. And the sort of the house rule that's become into our group is that we just don't use that ability, because there's no fun revealing our lowest card. The tension and the like having to work it out through sheer like body language is more fun than revealing. So it's just like no one, the rest of the group forces me not to use that.
That's interesting, because I think that's one of the things that makes the mind a true game. Like the mind is a game for sure, but I'm not on the camp of the mind's not a game, it's an activity. I'm not. The mind is an absolute game. But having that strategic, that weapon in there that says, okay, now is the right time to sacrifice a weapon versus sacrificing a life.
Yeah.
Because there's two elements in there. You have lives and weapons.
Yeah.
If you just converted all the weapons to a life, it would essentially be the same thing where you can make a certain number of mistakes. The things with the weapons is you're not losing a life because you are saying, we are likely going to lose it, so let's spend this weapon first so that we don't lose that life. So it's this decision you get to make in there. But it's interesting that your group's like, no, that feels too much like cheating. We can do that, but we can play Inchworm with our fingers. That's totally fine.
Yeah, they like that.
All right, let's talk about Hanabi for a second, because I think this is an interesting... Have either of you guys played Hanabi?
I haven't.
Yes, I have.
Okay, so basically, there are some conventions to this game that groups will create. As you tell me information about a card, I'm going to move it to the left side. And all the information, all the cards I don't have information on, I'm going to move to the right side. I'm going to turn cards sideways that I know that I'm not going to play. I'm going to discard those. Or whatever conventions you start making to remember the cards in your hand, because you don't get to look at the front of them. So it's a memory game in a lot of ways. You can get so specific on conventions that, you know, depending on what you tell me and... you know, what I've just told you, that is actually giving me extra meta information, because we've come up with this. It's kind of like Bridge. Bridge has this bidding system.
Yes.
Where how you bid tells you way more than what you've bid. Mm. And what happens is, as you become better and better with this language, which is sort of this meta cheating thing in a co-op game, you eventually solve the game. We have developed a language and a way of communicating information where we can just get a perfect game every time. Have we cheated? And once you get to that point, is there any reason to play the game anymore?
I don't think you cheated, but I don't think there's a way to play. Like, I don't think it's fun to play the game anymore. I think that by the rules, because the rules don't say you can't move your cards. They don't say you can't move them sideways. You are just, you have learned how to communicate this information. So it is learning to solve the game. And solving a game is not cheating. It's almost like beating the game. And then once you've beat the game, it's not as fun anymore.
Yeah, it's sort of like not respecting the spirit of the game. Even though they don't call those out as rules, you know, actually the spirit of the game was that you shouldn't know the full information, that you should be trying to hold a lot of this information in your head. And by creating this language, you've sort of broken that spirit.
Yeah, you're giving more information than what the intent of the game was for you to have.
Right.
So I just think that's an interesting thing, because Hanabi is not a game I actually like all that much, but mostly because the people I was playing it with just took it way too seriously, and it was never a fun game in the groups I was playing with. It is a fascinating game to study, though, and to like find like where I am comfortable stretching that line of meta information, what we agree on ahead of time. Because in the mind, we can simply say, okay, we're going to count Mississippis. I'm starting at one Mississippi. We're all going to count Mississippis. And when your number comes up, just play your card. Everyone just relax, count in your head, and we're going to win this game every time. It would not be a game worth playing.
Right.
You would win. You're not sharing any information with anybody, but you win in with this idea of, this is how we're going to beat this game.
Right.
And I don't know anyone who's done it. It's theorized on the internet a lot that, you know, oh, you could just do it this way and it would work. I don't know if it would, but you could. I mean, if you were disciplined enough, you could certainly do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you had one, if you're only one card away from each other, which happens frequently once you get to the later rounds, it would be tough because everyone's Mississippis would have to be very similar. But having said that, let's assume that you could do that. I mean, you're right. It's just kind of like that's not the spirit of the game. You know, the whole point of the game is to have ambiguity around who really has the lowest card and to not really know until that card goes down. And so that's the fun. And that's why my group doesn't like using the weapon to reveal our card, because it's like, that's the fun. It's the moment of reveal. Did we get it right? And then we can all celebrate. Oh my goodness. Mine was one away from yours, but we got it right.
There's celebrations in those weapons too. When you're like, oh man, we definitely did a good job picking that weapon.
That's true. Yeah, I'll give you that.
So, all right. What about D&D?
No, I need to talk about solo games.
I need to talk about
Maiden's Quest.
Sorry. Yes, solo games.
I seriously, I have, made rules for myself while playing. I've been playing a lot of Maiden's Quest, and this is, it's kind of like fan solitaire. You have a deck that's made with a maiden and a captor, and you populate your deck, and it's basically like a deck of cards, but it's made out of different things, items and health and dresses, saviors, and encounter cards where you're encountering some sort of villain. And you are fanning your cards out five at a time once you hit an encounter or a maiden or whatever it is. And you go up by level. So when you first go through, you're only getting the easy guys and you get to skip the hard ones. And then as it gets harder and harder, you have to decide when you hit an encounter, are you going to run or are you going to fight? And I have to make myself say it out loud almost. What am I going to do? Because it's so easy to then fan out and say, oh, well, I could have beat it. So I said I was going to fight it. Or, oh, I didn't get anything I need, but I have the thing that lets me flee without taking any consequences. So let's just say I didn't fight it. And it's so easy to cheat that way that I really have to police myself, because if you cheat, honestly, it's still kind of fun though. Even if you're cheating, but it's so breaking the spirit of the game. But
that reminds me of Choose Your Own Adventures.
It's so much like that.
Where you have your fingers in half the book because you're like, I just want to be able to flip back to those moments.
So we just did a Kickstarter episode, which I know you don't listen to, which I don't expect. You're not our target audience.
That's fine.
You're never going to back anything on Kickstarter. And I'm not actually...
Might surprise you one day.
I think he's baiting me. No, I'm not actually even baiting you or jabbing you. I actually truly feel that way. Some people don't care. That's why we broke it into a separate thing. But there is a Choose Your Own Adventure book on Kickstarter right now, and one of the powers, it's basically you have a character, you point by your character, and one of the skills you can get is the sixth sense, and certain passages will be marked sixth sense, and it'll give you three different choices, and if it has that, you can make a sixth sense roll, and if you make that roll, you can pick two of them and read the paragraphs for those two. And then you go back and pick the option of the three.
That's very smart.
The fact that that's in there makes it very explicit that having your fingers all over the place is cheating.
Yeah.
And if you want to be able to do that, here's the skill you can get. And I think it's brilliant. It's a brilliant way.
Maiden's Quest also has a look ahead mechanic. So it really is definitely cheating. You have to decide before you can. But the look ahead thing comes up during the encounter. So you can't use it to face the encounter you're already in, which is why you really have to decide going in what you're going to do. Oh, it's so tricky.
Well, and I totally get your saying it out loud thing.
Yeah.
And so when I'm playing Arkham Horror, the card game, by myself, I'll do a very, very similar thing.
Yeah.
Because it is really, really easy when you're playing a solo game to just, whatever, I'll fudge it through, which is actually why I kind of like when they take solo games and put them on an iPad or an iPhone or something.
Because I can't just fudge it.
It's doing it. I can't choose to cheat. And so One Deck Dungeon, I have all the One Deck Dungeon stuff, but I would much rather play that on the iPad because then I'm not tempted to cheat.
You know when you can cheat on some of those games, though, is when they offer a sort of freemium service where actually some things that you can buy will get you out of a jam that normally you wouldn't be able to.
Yeah.
If you spend some money, then it's sort of like you're cheating, but it's okay because you spent some money to cheat, so it's all right.
I don't buy into those on the video side. I was like, pay to decorate is fine, pay to win, As soon as I see a pay-to-win game, I'm like, nope, I'm out of here.
But it's like, you know, I'm addicted to Candy Crush right now. And years of not of not playing it. And there is a mechanism that allows me to get extra moves if I just pay a little bit of money. And it's like, oh, it's so tempting. I haven't done it yet, but it's like, it's tempting.
Yeah, don't do
when
it.
When you get close.
Because, and that's where we're talking about the slippery slope at the beginning. Once you do it once, you're like, I've done it. I can do it again. And then you just start unloading money. I've actually heard of people spend hundreds, rent money on Candy Crush for extra moves.
So, if we're moving a little bit into video games.
All right.
Strategy guides and websites that give you hints. Are they cheating?
No.
Well,
I'm gonna go with that. No.
Strategy and hints, no, I wouldn't say. It depends though. I mean, what if you're
probably depends.
What if your version of how I should play a game is this is a challenge to me? And if I am relying on someone else to get through this, then am I really challenging myself?
All right.
I mean, you could be cheating yourself in that way.
So let's take this and tie this into solo games. Because oftentimes those strategy guides, those you know, walkthroughs and stuff are typically for solo games. Right. Now there's MMO strategy guides and stuff like that. We'll get to that in a second. But in that case, you're still playing a solo game and you're kind of making a contract with yourself. I personally decided many years ago that I used to play Nintendo, 8-bit Nintendo, and the Nintendo had a hotline you could call up and say, I'm at this part in Zelda, and I don't know how to get past it. And it'll say, well, did you get the bow? It's like, oh, no. It's like, okay, well, you need to get the bow.
That was amazing. I remember that era, too. And my parents got super mad at me because I racked up a phone bill.
Oh, yeah. So I was then, was like, we were to get to a point, though, where this game is no longer fun. We are now frustrated. And if I don't know how to get past this, I'm going to just stop playing the game. Yes. So we never thought of it as cheating. We did say it's like, okay, I beat the game, but I needed like a hint or two hints or something like that. Mm-hmm. A lot of the escape rooms will do that, right?
Yes.
They build in hints into the game. For walkthroughs, I like the walkthroughs because I am a completionist. This is why I have so many things.
This is what I normally do. I beat it myself, and then I do the walkthrough, and I get everything. I like to play games multiple times. I want to do it more than once. I want to get all those gems. I want to get all the money. I want to pick up the best weapons, whatever it is. I want it all. And that's like the collecting is the fun for me. And knowing where it is doesn't take away the joy of actually getting it for me.
Breath of the Wild, I think that's what the new Zelda one on the Switch. That one, I had a strategy guide. Now, I didn't follow a strategy guide each time, but I would open it up. It's like, okay, where are the seeds here as I'm in this area? Because I didn't have time to play it twice.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to shortcut that. So for me, I don't consider that cheating in a video game, the walkthrough. In a actual game, like Seventh Continent, I'm not peeking ahead in Seventh Continent to see what would come up because that is blatantly cheating in my mind.
But it's interesting because, you know, you said about getting all the seeds and everything. Like, to me, that's part of the fun is the not knowing where they all are and the discovery. Like, in a game, especially like that, an adventure game like that, you know, the exploration and coming across, like, wait, maybe there's a seed up there and, like, finding my way up there and then either finding it or not. Like, that's so much fun. And you're sort of robbing yourself of that moment.
But I still have plenty of those. There are 150 seeds in this game.
Okay.
So I still have those moments. It's just once I'm done with an area, I'll check. It's like, okay, did I miss something?
Oh, okay. I thought you were doing it ahead of time.
You're
like,
no.
Oh, here, no. I know exactly where to go for all of them. Okay. Yeah.
See, that does feel like cheating to me. If you read it before you explore, I think that they should be used, like Chris said, as a hint, as a guide, as a, like, this is how I move forward so I don't get so frustrated I give up, instead of I'm just going to be perfect the first time I play through. That does take the fun away for me.
So going back to Arkham Horror for just a second, because I want to touch on this. This is the first game that allowed me to be comfortable with losing the game.
Yeah.
So Arkham Horror, you can die. You can fail the scenario completely, and there's no replay mechanism. It's not like go back and reset. If you reset, you are not playing the game as the rules specify. It's like, oh, I totally got trashed. I'm just going to reset this scenario and play it again. Now, Sydney and I did that once. We went through, we got at the end, and it's like, your characters die. And we're like, this is not fun. We're resetting the scenario as if we never played it, and we're going to play it again, because that would have stopped us not only from playing the next scenario, but probably just opening the game again. So sometimes it's like, all right, we're going to fudge these rules. But for this, I will say the same thing. I'm going to move here. Say it out loud. I'm going to move here. I'm going to draw a token. I pull the token out. I pull it completely away from the bag, and then I reveal it in my hand. I open up my hand and reveal it, and I deal with those consequences and whatever happened.
You do have to play like somebody's sitting over your shoulder watching, and they're going to call you on it. Yep. You do, like, there is something about like not being held accountable that makes it feel so easy to cheat that you have to pretend almost like somebody else is in the room watching you, because seriously, it's so tempting. Yeah.
But it's, the victories are so much sweeter. It's like finding the seed. Yeah. Finding it without the strategy guide is like you have this satisfying moment. Finding it with the strategy guide is like, okay, I can check this box. Those are different feelings.
They're both fun, though.
Yeah.
And as long as you're having fun, it's still a game as long as it's you're playing solo. If I was playing Maiden's Quest all the time and I was just cheating, I'm just scrolling through the deck, it stops being fun because I'm not playing the encounter. I'm not having that moment of like, am I going to do it or not? I'm just looking. And it's like, oh, did I shuffle right this time? That's not fun. It breaks the game. If you break the game in a solo, that's when I think it's cheating.
Yeah. It's finding that line, because I think it's, you know, you could go really meta with this and even be like, you know, in life, we all as human beings have this psychological urge to fudge the rules and cheat and bend things. And we all can look through our lives and point out the moments we did that in our general lives. Maybe people... embellished what they did on their resume, or they, just
driving over the speed limit.
Right. Exactly. Everyone does that. Right. So, and I don't even drive and I know that. So it's interesting because it's like the world would not turn if for not some people, and you would not necessarily like succeed in the most optimal way in life if you didn't do some fudging in life. But where is the line in which you've gone into complete, like that's wrong. That's just so wrong. Yeah, and it's like it's always up for debate.
Yep, the blurb we read at the beginning. Once you have reached a certain level of dishonesty, your baseline also shifts.
Yes.
So I may go 5 miles over the speed limit, and that's totally fine with me. But now I'm 5 miles over. What's another five? Now I'm going to go 10 miles over. Yeah. You know, and in Chicago, speed limit's 55. I'm going to go 75.
Yeah.
So I think that the way that it works is, in life, there are consequences for breaking the rules. If you're going 20 over and you get pulled over, you're going to get a worse ticket than for going 5 over. Right. And that's, you know, you have to decide. You have to know those consequences for the baseline. And in games, I am a big fan of the circle of trust. When you're sitting down to play a game, you are creating a circle of trust. And once you break that, the game is no longer fun.
Yep.
And you have to, you know, all like if you're all kind of cheating, and there's some games where it's like cheating is built into the rules. I think it's Munchkin even says like cheating is like actively required and encouraged in this game. Right. If nobody catches you, it's not really cheating. It's just playing the game.
Well, Euchre is exactly like that.
Yeah. So many games. There's like it's not breaking the circle to cheat.
It feels like Monopoly has become that. I mean, we all have those memories of sticking money under the corner of the thing and, you know,
and then revealing it. I have an extra $500 you didn't know about.
You didn't see that one, did you? And, you know, using just coming up with crazy house rules, like using extra trinkets to have more hotels or crazy stuff like that.
And as long as that's, you know, within your trust circle and it's still fun for everyone.
Yeah.
It's not really cheating.
Yeah.
If you're breaking the rules to the point where it's not fun for somebody at the table, the circle's broken, it's bad, don't do it, it wrecks the game.
Well, especially for solo games, because, you know, we've all played solitaire, that like whether you play it on the computer or you play it with an actual deck of cards, you know, it's easy enough to just cheat and stack the cards, you know, just organize them. You know, that's just called sorting. You could do that, but that doesn't make it fun. You don't have that, yes, I beat the game kind of fun that cheating robs you of.
I don't know. Here's the rebuttal, though, right? So, for instance, things like tournament play in a game, you know, like, let's say Scrabble, right? I always come back to this Ignite talk I watched. Go look it up. Scrabble, Ignite, 5-minute talks. And this guy talks about how he played tournament Scrabble, and he would do things like start playing Hawaiian words that look completely fake to provoke a challenge. They would get it wrong, and then he would start playing fake words, and they would be super scared to challenge from then onwards. And he was like, but that's within the rules. He was like, you know, if you read the rules, you know, as written, you know, it's on them to challenge me. And so I'm playing psychological warfare with him, and it's more fun for me to win in this scenario, but he's not playing to the spirit of the rules.
I think he is, though. I don't think that's cheating.
Okay.
Oh, in tournament play? I think that's expected. And the challenges are part of the game much more in tournament play than they are in, like, a regular game. Yeah, if he was sitting down to play with his niece and he did this, I'd be like, that's cheating. Yeah, that's dude. You were.
I would
like,
say that that's not sportsmanly. Yes. I wouldn't say it's cheating, though.
Yes. So, it's not sportsmanlike conduct, perhaps.
Yeah. So here's the thing with those types. For games that have consequences for being caught cheating and the consequence isn't you lose, those games actually encourage cheating in such a way that is advantageous to your game.
Right.
You look at sports, almost all sports have this, well, if you get away with it, it wasn't cheating. But if you don't get away with it, there's a consequence.
Could you not say that with any game? Yeah, it's like, well.
No, because if you were cheating, so Scrabble, there's a mechanism.
Right.
If I put a word down that's not a real word, I'm not cheating, but someone could challenge me and then I will lose points.
I guess what I'm rebutting is the sport thing you just said of, well, if you get away with it, like with Deflategate, for instance, in American football.
Sure.
Right? Like, I mean, that was just cheating. Like, it just was. Right?
That was just cheating.
Yeah.
I'm talking more like in the rules, pass interference, where the pass interference doesn't get called. Okay, fine. We move on. It was a risk because had you got caught, you would have lost a ton of yardage, well, given the other team a bunch of yardage.
Yeah.
But you take that risk, right?
So bringing it back to the Scrabble challenges, the way the challenges work, I believe, is if the challenge is upheld, like if the word is correct, then it becomes a penalty to the person who called the challenge.
Yes.
And if that's the rule, then that is a good strategy and it's within the rules. Yeah. If the intent of Scrabble was just to make it, you challenge because we want all of the words played to be real words, that wouldn't be how a challenge works.
Yeah. I don't know. There's just something about it. I completely agree with what you're saying. And then at the same time, it's like Scrabble is a game where you put down words that are real words. And this person was saying, I intentionally put down words that I know are not real words. And it's just like, there's something about that that just like, oh, rubs me the wrong way, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I give it to him. I was very impressed with him. And I was like, that's cool in one way.
But now,
in another way, like,
he's put it out there. Yeah, anyone can do that now. And does, everyone. Yeah. Who has seen that comes up against him, they know they're that's probably going to challenge him more aggressively now.
That's true.
And like, you know, good for him putting it out there that that's what he does. And, you know, I'm sure anyone who played him more than once, if they see these things, they go back. You know, they go back and they look up those words. I was going to challenge it, but I didn't.
That's true.
You know, it's just learning. It's becoming better players.
This is how
it's
I have pushing, to play you know? That player. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's his style.
And,
yeah.
And, you know, I don't think that is cheating. It might not be playing entirely within the spirit of the rules.
Yeah.
But I also think, you know, if you're playing in a competitive tournament, you're playing to win. You're playing with that intention. You're not just playing for fun. I think the circle is a little bit more flexible of like, it is a competitive nature. We are doing this to, you know, get the best scores, not to like make the most friends.
Right.
Yeah. And it goes back to that intentional versus unintentional too. Cause I still think it's within the rules, like the rules specifically have it. But when I'm playing Scrabble, I'm always putting random letters on there because I'm like, maybe that makes a word. I don't know.
right. This is too good. This is why the app helps. Cause it tells you when it's not a word or not. It won't let you put it down.
Yeah. Well, and like, Word with Friends gets rid of that cheating with words thing. It gets rid of the challenge aspect of it by just not allowing you to put a word down.
Right.
And when I'm playing that, and I don't play it often, but when I did, I just put a bunch of letters out there. I'm like, I think that's a word.
Everyone
is it a word?
Is no. Trying that. Yeah, just keep trial and error. Just keep throwing what looks like words out there.
And this was something I was going to say earlier, is if you were using the online dictionary to, you know, maximize your scores, is it something that you could have come up with just by trial and error of doing it over and over again? Then you're just saving yourself time.
That's true.
If you're just looking at all the scores, seeing if they're words, choosing whether or not to play it, you know, and everyone has the same ability to either use the same resources or have the same amount of time, then it's not really cheating.
So I still think it's definitely cheating. So we have we have a few minutes left. Let's talk about cheating in video games.
Right.
Because this is something that is, like, ever since online video games became a thing, we found ways to cheat with them. Actually, video games.
I was going to say, forget online, all video games.
I used to play Civilization in college. So this was, you know, a couple years ago. And I'm talking Civ 1, by the way. And there were data files that I could open up and I could modify the data files and give my, you know, pikemen a strength of 20. And then I could just, like, destroy the AI. And it was a solo game and it was just honestly, it was fun for me to figure out how to hack the data files. And I would do that, and that'd be great. I used to play Diablo, again, Diablo 1. And we had a great time playing. It's a four-player, multiplayer game. You go in, it's just a click fest. The more time you spend on it, the more powerful you get. But then we found that you could cheat. And there was, it was very simple, just like a little hack plugin that you put in, and you could give yourself all the gold you wanted. And the gold hack is all you needed, because then you could just buy everything. I stopped playing Diablo within 2 days after that. Wow. Nothing mattered to me anymore. It's like, I'm not earning anything. This is just like, it's like the end of the story. Like, it ruined the entire game to me. And from that point on, I'm like, cheating is what I do when I want to stop playing a game. When I want to stop it, I want to make the game no longer fun for me anymore, then I'll go and find the hack. I'll go and find the cheat. I'll go and find something just that spoils the entire game for me. When I was going and playing MMOs, you know, there was all kinds of like bots and stuff, like phishing bots and mining bots and all these types of things. Like, not going to do it, because as soon as I do, the game loses all value to me.
Yeah, the constraints of the rules are often what make the game in the first place. And that's what you're breaking by doing that. I mean, I guess, you know, that's one form of cheating, where you really sort of break the rules. There are other ways of cheating in games and life where you just sort of get a boost, and then that doesn't quite break it. You know, you kind of like, you're competitive and you're like, oh, I've got this extra like +5 or whatever it is. You can still hold on to that, like, oh, I'm enjoying this. Yeah. So it's interesting. There's a line there too.
And I'll do that for my mobile games. So oftentimes mobile games will have like a VIP subscription. So for $2 or whatever, you get an extra action every day for limited actions or something like that. I will do that because that specifically just increases the amount of efficiency per day that of the time I need to put in. And that does not feel like cheating to me. It just feels like, okay, I get 3 actions instead of 2. I will go up faster than somebody else, but someone else could just spend more time on it and they would still beat me to whatever. So that doesn't feel like cheating to me. I still feel like I have to put work into it. But just to pay to win, as soon as I see something's pay to win, I'm like, nope, I'm done. I'm out of here. Like, I can't. You have to be able to earn it. Otherwise, there's no point to it.
Right.
Well. Yeah. You don't want to pay to win. You can pay to play more. That's what I think a lot of Candy Crush that I would get sucked into is when I, especially when I was like third trimester pregnant and all I wanted to do was lie on the couch, I would just pay to get more hearts, pay to have more lives. Yes. I just want to sit on the couch and watch Investigation Discovery and play Candy Crush all day. And that's fine. But when you're starting to like, I need to pay to get that striped candy to win, that's not fun. So like, pay to play more is fine. Pay to win, I think, is cheaty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Candy Crush actually follows this very, very fine line. Because it's like pay for you can get 3 more moves for 99 cents or whatever it is. I think they use their in-game currency or whatever.
Gold bars.
Yeah. And it's like, it feels like, well, I earned these gold bars. So if I earn them, because you can earn them just through natural things.
I don't think so.
No, you earn them and then you eventually run out of them and then you pay to get more.
Right, yes. Exactly.
So they just give you so many gold bars. You can earn the special ability guys. And those ones that you earn, those ones, I feel like that's not as bad cheating. Yeah. Those are, I have won these with my experience. Yes.
But winning them with your dollars, that feels like, why am I even bothering? Why am I even playing this puzzle if I'm just going to spend money to solve the puzzle? I didn't actually solve the puzzle. It was like, you know, that 500-piece puzzle, that one's too hard. Give me the 20-piece puzzle. I'll give you $2 more, and then I can say that I put this puzzle together.
But they're just geniuses of psychology.
They are.
They've lured us in to that point. I got right to the end of that hard level. It was the 20th time I'd attempted it. Oh, I just need 2 more moves, and I would have beaten it. I'll pay for those 2 more moves. I mean, I haven't done that yet, but I've been tempted many times.
It's also, there's so much random going on in there. The way the candies fill in, you know, that's what gets me. It's not the like, oh, if I just pay for 2 more moves, I can beat it. It's that I just need to play 1 more time. I just need the tiles to come up the right way for me. If I just keep playing enough times, eventually it'll go my way.
Well, the crazy thing
and
for
it gets me,
I have no problem with playing for extra puzzles. Like, you use a certain number of puzzles per hour or whatever, right? That recharges. Yeah. I have no problem with paying to get more puzzles per hour, but I have a problem with paying for 2 extra moves to solve a puzzle.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
It's this weird.
I will, like, spend more money than Spencer wants to know that I spend buying lives in mobile games, but I will not buy, like, what, like 99 cents to get those striped candies? Forget it.
That crosses a line.
It crosses the line.
All right, so we're going to end this with a story. So I used to write video games, and trying to prevent people from cheating on video games, especially online games, is almost impossible. And so I wrote a game for the iPhone. This was way back. I think iPhone 3GS had just released or something like this, called Valet Hero. And we had a leaderboard. So it was basically you were getting a number of points, and you know each level had top 20 or top 100, I think, leaders on there. And we released the game. And number one, we saw thousands of plays. So we figured we became millionaires because we saw all these people playing the game. But we hadn't seen the numbers come back from Apple yet because that's delayed. So we're like, oh my God, we had like 3,000 downloads. We're going to make so much money. And then you look at the downloads and it was 8. Turns out in that particular case, people just pirated the game. So it's like the piracy, it was just insane how many pirates. But that's fine. We added ads in there and we made a little bit off of it. But what was most interesting is the leaderboards, the top 5 or 6 spots had scores that were impossible to get.
Right.
So like a good score would be like, 800 points or something like that. And there'd be like 28,000 points. And I'm like, there's no way you could have gotten this. Like mathematically impossible. How was this hacked? And I would go through that code over and over and over and try to figure out where's the problem.
Where's
here?
The hole, yeah.
Who's cheating this? Is it the system? Because we're using a third-party score system. It's like, maybe it's cheated there. And in the end, all we had to basically say is, those aren't just – you just forget those. They're not real scores.
Delete them off the leaderboard because we know they're impossible.
Right. Well, just you have to delete them in your head because as soon as you delete them, they would pop right back up there again.
Right.
And so you just have to kind of deal with this. And cheating begets cheating too. So as soon as you start seeing that, it's like, well, we want to be competitive too. So how can we cheat better than the other people? And it becomes this game of cheaters. And you can't play fair anymore. It's this whole meta game of cheating. It's insane.
It's true. But at some point, cheating becomes the game. And you said this earlier, even when you were playing Civilization, it wasn't just that like the cheating was like to win the game. The cheating was the game. Yeah. And there's something to it. And as long, like is it, it's the circle. And as long as that's where your fun is, you're playing the game, that's still fine.
I think it's fine when it just affects you.
But when you're affecting others,
leaderboard,
you break the circle.
Yep. And you're breaking the circle for a lot of people.
Everybody. Yep. So stop cheating.
All right. Let's stop this episode as well. Some quick announcements. We've talked about this a few times already. Sydney and I will be in Essen in October. We'll be at GameholeCon in November. If you're interested in seeing us there, shoot us an email. Let us know. And you can follow us on Facebook at @TabletopGameTalkPodcast, Twitter at TabletopGameTLK, Kitty's Lawful Good Mom, Josh is Blonde. I am Game Master Chris. All those links are in the show notes too, by the way. So we say these and then just take a look at the notes. You can support us on Patreon at TabletopGameTalk.com/Patreon. And then you get to hear us try to read your names in random orders. And for the rest of this, do I have Kitty? No. Josh, you're going to read the rest of this.
Oh, okay. I was ready to. I had my name in it.
Game Talk is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Thanks for listening. And remember, we love your feedback. So email us with comments or questions about today's topic at feedback@tabletopgametalk.com. And you'll be entered into a $50 gift card drawing on our next feedback episode.
Finally, a huge thank you to our patrons.
Emil Jiljam, George, Adam Harrison, Corey Bell, the SGC,
Samir Biswas, Jason Strong, Terrence Miltner, Stephen Seitz,
Michael, Brian Arnold, Sean P. Kelly, Daniel Jeppard,
C. Marie, Rudy Liu, Benjamin Heimowitz, Joey Huang, Stefan Fraggle Rock Phillips,
Caleb O'Brien, Jennifer Engelbrecht, Justin Willard, Christopher Dong,
Jason Marks, Jeremy Fisher, Kyle Hammond, David Radke, Lance Morgan,
Nick Quickstra, David Sellers, Jason Rodney, Michael Yanikowski, Miles Clark,
Cindy Lem, Phil Swartzel, Jordan Livingston, Zoe Ng,
Chad Covey, Ann Reynolds, Eric Hoffman, Adrian Dong,
Christopher Vincent, Nate, Faz Flintham, Sean Peck, Eric Salander,
Adam Kribles, Mike Smith, Christine Meyer, Trevor Davis, and Wesley Trailer.
Tim Verney, Chris Lowe, Joe Hoover, and Timothy Gross.
Until next week, keep playing games and having fun. So Josh, this is the first time we've recorded in your apartment.
I know. Small little high-rise thing going on in Chicago South Loop.
Yeah, we like the windows. I've been staring at the sun the entire time. I think I'm blind.
No, you're fine. Your retinas will recover. You're a young guy. But it's a nice view, isn't it?
It is. All right, now let's go to your common area, and we're going to play Between the Castles.
Between Two Castles.
Between Two Castles of Mad King Ludwig. Or something along those lines.
All right.
It's supposed to be great.
I can't wait.